Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Defense Deconstructed on the CGAI Podcast Network. I'm your host and Vice President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, Dave Perry. So thank you, everyone, for joining us today virtually from wherever you are for this webinar about Canadians' attitudes towards international security. Polls were undertaken, as you would have all been aware, from the survey that was done by Nanos Research, and Nick Nanos will be joining us to offer some comments on it in a minute. Before we started, I wanted to do a couple things. First, recognize the partnership that we have with the School of Public Policy at the University of Calgary, and Jean-Christophe Boucher is the emblem of that, a fellow of ours, as well as one of the leads at the school on this area of work. And also acknowledge our strategic partners in Lockheed Martin Canada and General Dynamics that help us put these things on. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jean-Christophe Boucher. And then after I give a brief introduction of all of the participants, Jean-Christophe's an assistant professor at the School of Public Policy and the Department of Political Science at the University of Calgary, in addition to being a fellow with the Canadian Global Affairs Institute. And he's the Director of Research and Civil Military Relations at the Canadian Defense and Security Network, who is also a partner in putting on this survey work. Colleen Bell is an assistant professor at the University of Saskatchewan. She specializes in theories of security and war and the boundary between military and civilian modes of intervention. And then last but not least, Nick Nanos is the chief data scientist at Nanos Research. He's a global fellow at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington. He's an honorary naval captain, a research professor at the State University of New York in Buffalo, and the official pollster for the Globe and Mail. So with that introduction, I'm going to come back to my colleague, Jean-Christophe Boucher, to start off the discussion on the actual survey results in particular. And we'll go through the three panelists, asking all of them to kind of present their takeaway about what some of the most significant findings of this very, very detailed and extensive survey has found. JC, over to you.
Great. This has been a year-long endeavor that we started pre-COVID, and it seems that everything we've done pre-COVID doesn't exist. And we're happy to show the results today. So what we've done here is one of the great misgivings of academics on the study of foreign policy and national defense was how our instruments of measuring public opinion were lacking, and which, you know, limited our capacity to do longitudinal data and kind of like have a constructive conversation about foreign policy issues in Canada. So what we've tried to do is we've brought together academics, people from government, of course, the team from Nick Nanos Research, and we brought all of those together in Calgary to kind of, you know, do a brainstorming of what we would like to see in that kind of instrument. And we've designed it and we've put it in play. Basically, the poll has four broad themes: Canada's place in the world, perceptions of international threats, the role of the King's Armed Forces in military interventions, and defense policy issues and Canadian society. Overall, it's about 60 to 70 questions that we've asked. The survey was fielded at the end of August, so in COVID, and it's fairly large, 1,500 respondents. I'm going to go through like kind of the main issues that I think were brought here. Really, the question was, you know, how would people understand, or what role do they think would advance Canada's world in the world? And here what we see is an interesting thing where diplomacy comes in front, with international trade and environment kind of being at the same level, and then immigration, foreign aid, and national defense being less valued considered less important to advance Canada's place in the world. In terms of international threats, we've asked here an open question: what do you think will be the greatest threat to Canada we'll face in 10 years? By far, China comes in front. That has been kind of the same result we've seen through all the polls we've done in Canada. Climate change, cyber attacks, US Trump, that's probably going to change with Biden team. Terrorism and pandemics were reduced. Even in right in the midst of a pandemic, pandemics are still considered relatively less important. Priorities for the Canadian Armed Forces. Here we've asked them to kind of, you know, question specifically on the kinds of roles that the Canadian Armed Forces should do in the world. Protect the safety of Canadian citizens, the more important, and the least important, which is kind of interesting considering how we've looked at peacekeeping, is the contribution to international security is considered less important. 67% say it is very important. Here, when we open up to an open question, we ask about these kinds of things. And here you can see peacekeeping comes on top, which almost 40%. Interestingly, and we can have this conversation, this is skewed by province, by age, by gender. This is interesting. Defend Canada was the second most important mission. And then it goes down to other kinds of things. So instead of an open question, we've asked them specifically, how do you support these specific international missions? Here, participating to a national disaster relief abroad, peacekeeping and defense cooperation with allies, highly supportive. Conducting cyber operations, that was a kind of surprise. We'll talk about this. And then in decreasing order, special forces, Canadian Navy, Canadian Army, and airstrikes. Airstrike, the least supported mission, which is kind of interesting in the grand scheme of things. We've asked questions about inclusion. How do you think is the King's Armed Forces on the right or the wrong track? Here you can see that there's a lot of room for improvement. Inclusion of Francophones, 48% on the right track. Inclusion of members of the LGBTQ community, most on the wrong track with 30%, which means that there's a lot of to do there. Support for defense spending. Our partner, Nick Nanos, wrote a beautiful op-ed in the Globe and Mail this weekend talking about this. And what we see here is considerable support for defense spending. This is interesting. I think the way we phrased the question was actually better than a lot of the polls that we've seen. This is something we wanted to do. This data is skewed by gender, which is interesting, by province also, and by age groups, which, you know, makes it a complicated answer. And finally, I call this the best slide of the entire poll. You know, the confidence on leaders of national defense, academics come like most, you know, confident, which I'm happy with. I think the intelligence agencies, and we joke about I'm not sure people know what that means, but they like it. The military leaders, that's good. More troubling, politicians and media are considered less, you know, less valued or less trust in those kinds of leaders. And this is a problem that we can talk about. So overall, this is what we've got for the polls, and we can go on and have like a conversation on everything, but this is a broad overview.
Thanks, JC. Colleen, I'll come to you next. What, from your takeaway, are the most significant parts of this finding and this survey of Canadians' public opinions?
I think what stuck out for me the most and it came through in a bunch of different questions, in my view, was the fact that a lot of people see values as should be drivers of foreign policy, of Canada's role in the world. And so 59% of people said values should be a foreign policy priority. And what they meant by that primarily was inclusivity, fairness, equality, peace, and then close to that was human rights, democracy. And what was noted is that the way that we asked the questions was such that values were kind of separated from interests. So you can think of a liberal worldview versus a kind of more realist one. And values mattered more to more people than interests did. So 59% of people said that values should be a foreign policy priority, whereas only 17% of people said interests. And 24% said a balance between the two. And so I think it's fair to say that a significant portion of the respondents, at least, that's reflective of the population, are somewhat liberal at heart, and they see a role for values in foreign policy. And what this means, I think, is that they believe in or have faith in a rules-based international system and society, and that there's a sense, I think, as well, if you're going to, you know, hitch up to values, that moral progress is possible, that the world can become a better place if people are driven by good values and good ideas. And we saw this as well with a preference for human rights and international law to be meaningful and to matter in relations to things like trade with respect to weapons, for example, because we had a specific question about that, that that mattered more than other considerations such as, you know, innovation or jobs even. And I think that this preference for values was reflected in several areas of questioning that were sort of peppered through the survey. So it mattered in terms of roles for the military, as JC alluded to, peacekeeping, disaster relief, and to some extent training foreign fighters were prioritized as ways in which sort of roles for the military that were seen as preferable. In addition, I think it played a role in perceptions of international threats with respect to, for example, China. I think there were views that China is sort of out of step with international norms and sort of human rights values and so forth. And obviously the issue of the two Michaels, I think, was maybe playing on people's minds as they were answering these questions. I think it also relates perhaps to the, you know, the concern about the US slash Trump. We sort of, I think that it played a role in that as well, seeing the US at least under the Trump administration as being sort of out of step with international norms. I also think it played preferences for diplomacy, JC's slide that showed diplomacy as a significant preference for how Canadians or respondents in the survey want to see us engaged in the world. Diplomacy's prioritized the use of reason, maybe preference for negotiation and conversations about things as a way to resolve conflict and move forward with shared concerns. But I think it was also reflected in views on immigration. Immigration wasn't prioritized in all the questions, it wasn't you know, at the very top. But I would say that my reading is that views on immigration broadly and largely were seen as a source of strength for Canada rather than like a problem. And I would say that immigration stands in here as a proxy for diversity, for multiculturalism, for perhaps race or racism. So I think that people actually see immigration and diversity as largely a good thing. And then also I would say that the internationalism, if I had to say what kind of internationalist perspective came out of the survey, I think it's one that is very focused on Europe, seeing Europe as a model that Canada wants to be partnered with, as well as the UN. I think the UN fared quite well in several of the questions as being maybe a symbol again of that rules-based international system that is not reducible even to the permanent five, but rather represents broader international norms and rules that respondents wanted to see Canada aligned with. So that's what I would say I noticed for one thing. I can go into each of the areas that I spoke about because I have notes on that too, but I don't want to take up more time. I can come back to that too.
Okay, well, we'll get you to hold those thoughts. Thank you, Colleen. Nick, I'm going to come to you and ask you the same question. You wrote an op-ed, but either including or beyond what you wrote in that op-ed, what struck you most about these findings?
Well, I'm not going to duplicate what both Jean-Christophe and Colleen said, but what I'd like to do is to maybe add a little context to two of the big findings. I found the question on threats, international threats, which is kind of like what I'd say the mindset or frame of Canadians was actually quite telling, because about Canadians were twice as likely to kind of score threats on the threat scale of 8, 9, or 10, as opposed to a 0, 1, or 2, which means that about 40% or 4 out of every 10 Canadians actually, when they think of international relations and the international situation, think of threats. They don't have warm, fuzzy feelings about our place in the world and doing good and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's quite significant in terms of the fact that when Canadians think of the international environment, they're twice as likely to think of it as a threatening place as opposed to a place with no threat. So I put that on the table as context and the frame through which many Canadians kind of see the intersection of foreign policy and defense. The other caveat that I'd like to put on this has to do with the discussion about values-based foreign policy versus interest-based foreign policies that Colleen started to unpack, where, you know, at the time of the survey, it's basically, you know, 59% or 6 out of every 10 favored a values-based foreign policy, 17% an interest-based foreign policy when we ask Canadians to put themselves on the continuum. I'd like to put a little asterisk beside that based on some of the longitudinal tracking that we've done in a lot of other public policy issues. What we find, at least, is that we have to be careful in taking this snapshot in time and projecting kind of this is kind of like a foundational view of Canadians. In my experience, at least, when we ask questions like this, they're very dependent on who happens to be the government of the day. And you know, to put this into context, you know, when the Prime Minister says that, you know, this is what should be driving our foreign policy, there's a significant proportion of Canadians that take that at face value. So, you know, I think to Colleen's point, the values score at this time partially reflects the fact that we have a federal government and a prime minister that puts a very high premium on values-based foreign policy. So we have to be careful in terms of seeing that that's kind of a universal view that holds up over time. Because we may find out that in the future, there might be a different prime minister that perhaps might be more interest-based and people taking that at face value. And what I found is, depending on who the prime minister of the day is, that they have a significant influence on the direction that at least some Canadians accept and support when it comes to foreign policy. And we have to remember, I'd always kind of say this, that when we're doing our survey, we're surveying average Canadians. They're not experts in defense policy. They're not experts in foreign policy. They're not experts in arms procurement. You know, so that's why I'd like to put the little asterisk that the survey is a snapshot of views at this particular point in time, and that the government, the prime minister, and it doesn't make any difference whether the prime minister, what party that prime minister is from, has an influence on basically setting the table for priorities, and that there are a number of Canadians that accept those priorities at face value because they're not experts. And I'd like to put that on the table. So with that, I'll kind of stop.
Listening to an episode of Defense Deconstructed on the CGAI Podcast Network. These engaging conversations from the front lines of policy and politics are brought to you by the Canadian Association of Defense and Security Industries.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Colleen, I'm going to come back to you and ask you what you thought was the most surprising, or what are some of the most surprising things to come out of this data?
I don't know if I was like overwhelmingly surprised by any particular thing, but one thing that I was sort of delighted by, which maybe speaks to Nick's point about the fact that, you know, that most of the people that answered the survey are not people who are experts in foreign policy and sort of even Canadian politics. But what I thought was interesting was the significant portion of people, when asked about questions of inclusion, of diverse groups of people, women, LGBTQ people, Francophone and so forth, and visible minorities, a huge portion, like often 30% plus, said that they were unsure. And so what this tells me is that on the one hand, there's a sizable portion of the population that's not paying very much attention to these questions around inclusion of diverse communities within the military, but also that people are willing to acknowledge that, which I kind of see as like right now in the age of fake news, so to speak, when, you know, we have very influential people being able to talk about things that they don't know anything about and just make stuff up, for people to actually just admit to not knowing something. And so I think that there's actually, that would suggest, I think, that maybe there's work to do so that people do feel more informed about how the military reflects or does not reflect broader Canadian society, but also that people are not trying to pretend that they know something and just answering, ticking a box because they don't want to seem like they don't know something. So I saw that as actually like admitting to it as a good thing, despite the large percentage.
Okay, thanks. JC, thoughts from you about what struck you in the data that you weren't expecting?
Sure. I think one of the things I wanted, like, there's a lot of different things that I find interesting. I think the focus on diplomacy is interesting and the large support for that, considering that a lot of our efforts or a lot of the money we spend on foreign policy isn't necessarily on that, you know, agenda. I was surprised by the fact that foreign aid doesn't score really high in that priority. It's actually one of the priorities that is the least considered important, which I thought was interesting. One of the things I wanted to look into when we've built this with like Steve Cinnamon from Carleton and everything was like Canadian support toward peacekeeping, right? We have all these arguments about like how much do Canadians love peacekeeping? Is it part of our history? How does this fit into like the myth and our arguments about ourselves as a nation? And effectively, when we ask people like, do you support UN peacekeeping? Everybody says, oh yeah, sure, right? It's kind of an apple pie kind of thing. However, when we ask people an open question of what should be the most, you know, the most important priority of our, you know, international missions, then peacekeeping comes on top at 40%, but it's a lot less than what we've seen historically. Historically, in the 1970s and 1980s, peacekeeping would score 60%. That's kind of interesting. And then when we start to unpack this data and look at the gender disparity, we see, for example, that male respondents are you know, less favorable to peacekeeping than female respondents. We also saw like a huge disparity based on age. Actually, you know, like a lot of support, a lot of the aggregate support for peacekeeping comes from older generations, 55 and plus Canadians. And the younger you get, the least supportive you are of peacekeeping and the more you're focusing on defending Canada. And it speaks to maybe what Nick was talking about, how maybe younger generations who grew up with, you know, 9/11 and the Iraq War and the Afghanistan missions, and now the pandemics, I guess, are less willing to, or at least peacekeeping resonates less with them than other parts. And it speaks to the notion that maybe with, you know, a rising China and the fact that Canadians actually now like kind of realize this problem, then it seems like peacekeeping isn't really the tool that solves that piece of the puzzle. And I find this interesting, at least in terms of the narrative we talk about ourselves as a country. Maybe peacekeeping is an age thing. And the younger you are, you know, if you haven't been through all these years of peacekeeping tradition, maybe we aren't, you know, the younger generations aren't as devoted to peacekeeping as we think they are. And that, I thought that was kind of interesting. And this is the kinds of things that I want to deep dive into further and kind of understand, like, what does that actually mean? And is there like a generational imprint to how people think about foreign policy issues, which I don't, like, I don't know. And this is kind of the thing that you know, spoke to me.
Thanks, JC. Nick, just a thought from you. You're doing this all the time, but were there still pieces of the data that you found surprising?
Yeah, two other key takeaways. You know, I always find it interesting that when you roll up I have a significant amount of respect for the views of Canadians and the nuance and complexity of views once you roll them all up together. You know, if I was to summarize what I thought was quite interesting and I think extremely nuanced, is that when Canadians think about the intersection of foreign policy and defense, they don't think of defense as an assertion or projection of force. They see defense basically as a supporting mechanism for Canada to lead by example, right? Not necessarily to have interest base, but to lead by example. What do we mean by that? When we saw the types of missions that Canadians supported the most, disaster relief, peacekeeping, defense cooperation with our allies, it speaks to the type of role that Canadians would like to see Canada take on the world stage and what they want to see our Canadian Armed Forces as enablers of us being able to lead by example, right? Helping people in need, keeping the peace, being good allies and neighbors, and not to see it as kind of like what I'll say a more traditional kind of post-World War II assertion of power. So I thought that was quite striking. And then the other thing had to do with the money. Okay, so let's face it, we did. And you know, when Jean-Christophe and I and the colleagues that were all working on this project talked about the timing, the first thing that we just talked about was, do we want to do this survey during the pandemic? And what might it mean for the results? And to be quite frank, when we wrote the question on funding, that was one of the questions that I thought, I wonder how this is going to stack up when governments are under significant fiscal pressure, where Canadians need help, Canadian enterprises are supporting, we're running record deficits that are equivalent to a war. Like there's a war going on now. It's not like the old world wars. It's actually a war against the pandemic. The fiscal pressure is basically equivalent or greater than the wars in the past. And I was quite struck by the fact that, you know, 41% of Canadians were actually okay with spending more on defense, even when we couched in terms of spending more money on tax dollars compared to spending less and having what I'll say a more prescriptive or limited mission, and you know, which was I think only about 15% of Canadians. And I think this is quite important that faced with the trade-offs, like if we had just asked, do you want defense spend, you know, if we just asked kind of like, do you like defense spending and stuff like that, it would have been, you know, the numbers would have been different. But, you know, in the context of the trade-offs, and I think this is actually the most important thing probably to take away, that for anyone that believes that it's important to have a properly funded, I won't say well-funded, a properly funded Canadian Armed Forces, there should not be a discussion like what I'll say the Venetian ledger entry on, yeah, we need more. We need a discussion on the trade-offs and the mission and the role of the Canadian Armed Forces and how it supports Canada's role in the world and how it supports our foreign policy and how it supports who we want to be in order to have what I'll say a good and fulsome discussion on this.
I'm going to just pop in and formally wrap things up. Thank everybody. And just as a promo to folks, we're working on a series of other webinars like this, a couple on procurement topics, the role D&D might play in post-pandemic economic recovery, North American defense modernization, and climate change and defense, in addition to other topics. So if you're interested in tuning into those, actually read our emails and don't just junk or delete them. And if folks have interesting ideas or even uninteresting ideas for different topics that we can pursue in the future, please shoot them to me.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Defense Deconstructed, part of the CGAI Podcast Network. If you like the show, please remember to rate us and leave a comment on your podcast app. And if you like our stuff, please feel free to check out our donation page at cgai.ca/support. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. The podcast is brought to you by our team in Ottawa, and thanks go to our producer, Charlotte Duval-Antoine, and Drew Phillips for providing our music. I'm Dave Perry, and thanks for listening to this episode of Defense Deconstructed.